Welcome back, everybody. And of course, as always, we've got a lot of cool stuff going on with The Valley Outdoors. And whether it's on Facebook or where else, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
Absolutely. And lots of good stuff. Interactive map that can tell you anything and everything that's going on in any state that you want to visit. So check that out. And that is a cool place to go, I think. How about you?
Sure.
We'll just go with that. How about that? Let's jump right into it, Ava. Idaho man dumps poached deer remains in a cardboard box with his own address on the label.
Oh, my goodness.
An Idaho man recently received his just desserts after a slew of wildlife infractions that authorities were able to identify because of his shockingly careless attempt to dispose of the evidence. According to Idaho Fish and Game, investigation began in 2024 when a local rancher came on a cardboard box filled with a deer hide, bone, hooves, and blood before the season had even opened. The rancher reported the box to local IDFG officer, who soon realized the box actually still had a shipping label affixed to it containing a local address.
My goodness.
The officer went to that address and met with the property owner of Cottonwood, Idaho, and initially denied the box belonged to him, then presented with the label he claimed someone must have taken it from the dumpster. Officer, unsurprisingly, said he doubted that was the case and suspected he would find fresh deer meat in his coolers. When prompted, the man to admit to illegally poaching the deer, he finally did. He poached the deer 12 days before the opening season without any valid hunting license or tag. He seized the meat, antlers, and issued a citation. But the mind-numbingly bad decisions didn't end there. The next day, the same officer was patrolling an area when he heard a rifle shot from, yes, the same guy's property. On arriving, he found a hunting blind set up near a salt block water trough and feeder despite baiting for elk and deer being illegal in the state.
What on earth is this person thinking?
You can't fix stupid. After executing the search warrant, he found more evidence of baiting as well as photos and texts with evidence of multiple poached deer and illegally taken moose. He eventually took a plea deal and resulted in 10 days of incarceration, 10,000 in civil penalties, and a lifetime hunting, fishing, and trapping ban.
Good.
What do you care what I do on my own property, he told the officer in the initial interview. He said, I'm not hurting anybody by grabbing deer and putting them in my freezer. However, the spokesperson put it, wildlife belongs to all of us. By taking game illegally, he was stealing wildlife from his neighbors who enjoy viewing them. And was stealing the chance for Idaho sportspersons to be allowed legal opportunity.
Yeah, people that are following the law. Oh, my goodness. So he got in trouble, and then still the next day.
The next day, he went back at it.
So I wonder, like, what the fine was the first time, you know, with the...
Well, the first one's 10 grand.
No. 10 grand after he got in trouble the second time. He went to jail for 10 days and had a $10,000 fine.
Right.
That was the first time. Like, because it must not have been enough to sway him. You know, they probably just showed up at his house and gave him a fine the first time. And then the next day he did it again. And then they're like, well, now.
It all ran together. There's so many charges he's going to be having. I'm sorry. How can you actually, in your right mind, think that that's going to be okay?
I don't know. And that it was only 12 days early. Like, you couldn't have waited less than 2 weeks.
Well, but Ava, he had no license, no permit, nothing.
And evidence of previous things that he's done. So it's year round.
And he's hunting over a bait pile watering trough. Yeah. And he did.
Oh, my goodness.
Poaching a moose?
Yeah, that's not good.
I don't know. Crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. Little bit of more information on a story we did a while back regarding, and this is a pretty heated discussion, Trio was pushing for Wisconsin NRB and the DNR on the regulation of wake boats. And Natural Resource Board, the NRB members, expressed concerns similar to those that were expressed by citizens that the Department of Natural Resources is not doing enough to prevent invasive species from spreading into Wisconsin waters. Board members heard three persistent citizens, and this is there's three individuals, that's the story. They've long expressed concerns over the inability of wake boats to eliminate invasive species that remain in the ballast tanks when the boat moves from lake to lake. They say the wake boat propulsion also will damage vegetation and lake bottom. They expressed similar frustrations this time with the DNR and asked to see the DNR's review of a wake boat research. Goes on that there were a lot of different elements that came up, said that we're not going to be able to do anything with it. They can't, there's nothing they can do, place regulations on wake boats. What's legally preventing them, the three have asked, and they wanted to see a chart that could clarify what can be done because the board had been waiting for over 3+ years to see some type of action. So if you're not familiar with it, a wakeboard boat isn't just a regular boat as per se. You've got paddles on the sides that are hydraulically controlled, so you can change how big the wake is, so you can actually surf behind that boat, or you can pull behind it and have a wakeboard style, not water ski, but a wakeboard, which is a wider, shorter board. The contention is, in this particular case, twofold. One, and this is from looking at multiple stories and researching this, one of the situations is the fact that they add ballast into tanks that are on the boat. Those tanks will contain water that could be from a, as you've probably heard on the show, AWS, aquatic invasive species, which are contaminating other waterways if they're not contaminated now. And these offer transportation to and from those bodies of water. If they don't completely drain out the tank could possibly contain either microbes that will start that process in another unexposed lake, which is a problem. And that's one of the things that comes up. There is no way to completely remove all the water from those tanks. Some people have separate bags that they have, and they have those as well that are not necessarily part of the whole system. But it is a pretty elaborate pump-in, pump-out system. All right, so the other piece of this is, when they're running boats, they run oftentimes, most times, the wakeboard boat is not on plane. And it's up at a significant angle, so the thrust of the propeller is pushing straight down. Originally, they thought it not to be affecting anything. About 8 to 10 feet would be the key depth that would impact. They've actually seen it now upwards of 18 feet. That it disturbs the bottom and vegetation and destroys the vegetation. Again, this is where the battle comes in. I don't have, I don't know what to say on it. They have to do more as far as requirements, keeping boats further from shore or lakes that are do achieve a certain depth level so that other lakes don't have that same type of degradation of the vegetation. Other people claim that it's eroding shorelines because of the wakes themselves. It's kind of a crazy deal. In this particular case, in Wisconsin, the northern lakes are the largest concentration of glacial lakes in the world. They're all at risk. He said that the state statute states the DNR shall establish a statewide program to control invasive species in the state. It comes to, in this particular case, they have proposed what's called a home lake rule petition, which requires boat owners to decontaminate the ballast tanks before moving from one lake to another for 180 days, and it still has not made a decision yet. They're really looking at trying to figure out how to straighten this out. I think this is going to be knockdown, drag out, because you're going to be battling dealerships, you're going to be battling manufacturers, you're going to be battling a lot, and it very well could be that you could have some impact that's going to be more of a across the U.S. type scenario. The same thing, this may sound abstract, but the same thing kind of came up with the EPA and the Clean Boating Act, per se. We call it CARB, or California Air Resources Board. If you look on boats these days, they have a star rating, and motors have those on there as well. Those are from the EPA. That all stemmed from someone who was unhappy about a jet ski on their lake, and they couldn't figure out how to get it off the lake because it was noisy. They didn't work, so they actually ended up saying, well, let's just get it off the lake because it's polluting. And as soon as you say that in California, it lit everybody up. And, of course, that is where all of the advanced technologies had to come out. They had to have same thing with boats. They have to have different exhaust catalytic converters on boats. So it's really put and thrust the clean environment on a very small, relatively small segment of the combustion engines in the world, and it drives prices up without question. So one of those things, I will say, it's going to be interesting how that goes, but what do? You see how it plays out. Get the popcorn, Ava.
Yeah, no kidding.
Let's see how it plays out. All right, moving on to fun stuff. I mentioned at the top of the show, and of course, you know, as I say fun stuff, that's not really proper host-type English. How about some amazing stories coming out of the 150th Westminster Dog Show? How about that? The dog was Penny, and the win was priceless, the story goes. And it was a good-looking dog. The Doberman Pinscher named Penny won Best in Show this last Tuesday at the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show, netting U.S. Dog's most coveted prize and giving veteran handler Andy Linton another win after nearly four decades. Linton got Best in Show in 89 with another Doberman named Indy. Penny is a great Doberman, best one I have ever seen. He told a supportive crowd, despite health problems, he guided his four-year-old dog through impeccably crisp performance. Let's see. That was one of the goals he said he had in a later conversation. He said it's a big milestone, and it was really extra special. The runner-up had cheers just as loud. Amazing. Take a guess at what the species that got second place.
I'm trying to remember. What was it?
Chesapeake Bay Retriever.
Uh-huh.
Named Coda. While Dobermans have won five times, including Tuesday, no retriever has ever won, and the fans went nuts when it came in second. The dog seemed to enjoy the moment, particularly when his handler let him play with the ribbon. Nice. Something to watch. You can go on YouTube. I saw it. It's pretty cool. Other finalists include an Afghan hound named Zaida, a Lhasa Apso called JJ, and a Maltese named Cookie, an old English sheepdog dubbed Graham, and a smooth fox terrier named Wager. The judge, two-time Westminster handler David Fitzpatrick, called the lineup the one that will go down in history. Each dog is assessed according to how closely a match is the ideal for the breed. Winner gets trophy ribbons and bragging rights. The Doberman won Best in Show. It was the fifth time Doberman had won the show, most coveted prize. And I'm just looking here, a couple of the stories. Tons of handlers and other dog breeders cheered for the undistractable dog. They said the dog was like strolling around. It was like,
so the handler had won Best in Show
1989.
A long time ago, right?
Yep, another Doberman.
Well, apparently he is dealing with some health issues right now.
Yep.
And so Penny, like, took over. Like, you could just tell when she was out there and doing her thing. It was like, I got this. Don't worry about it. Because it is a team effort, you know. But everybody was like, yeah, you could just tell that she meant business.
Well, and it says here, too, ringside afterwards, Penny politely but pointedly nudged her nose into a visitor's leg looking for something. Pets, as it turned out. She generally is very chill, but she can get pretty pumped up for a bad guy or a squirrel. They said the co-owner of Penny is a very demanding and very smart dog. She's also a pleaser. She'll do anything for food, quote-unquote, the snacks. came out on top. You know how many dogs are competing?
2,500
dogs with over 200 breeds.
And they were talking about the odds, you know, and coming away best in show. And it's like, I don't know, everybody has the same amount of chance when it starts, but when it's getting down to it, it...
Yeah. Two nights of shows in semifinals, spectators cheered extra loud for, and I'm not going to joke about this, Zolo Chintzli. It's X-O-L-O-I-T-Z-C-U-I-N-T-L-I.
Whew.
Name is Calico. A hairless dog who went around the ring like he had nothing to prove.
I love that.
A Vizsla named Beamer charmed the audience by hopping into a box set out for the handler's tools. And a Newfoundlander got laughs when he jumped up on his handler, standing as tall as she was.
Yeah. It's funny. Dogs will be dogs, man.
That's funny.
It's hard to be best in show.
Well, it's pretty cool. Well, tell you what, real briefly before we jump out of here, the one of the things that's coming up, Mille Lacs is now changing their limit on perch. We talked about it a little bit, but February 9th, it is now going to be in effect, perch daily limit in Minnesota, Mille Lacs Lake drops to 5. And that is pretty crazy because last year it was 750 to 1,000% increase in take rate, and that is the result, and that was a direct result of forward-facing sonar. So that said, we'll leave you guys with that. Have a fantastic weekend, everybody. I think it's going to be a great one. Enjoy being outside. Be safe on the ice, but have fun at the same time. Have a great one. We'll see you guys next week.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.